And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 673. After a couple of fab weeks off, we are back and ready to go here, recapping the week 11 fab that took place on Sunday evening. So much fun. So much more news that's come out on Monday since then that would make fab even more fun this next week, and with some more prospects getting the call. But we'll worry about that next week. But we'll recap week 11. We're also going to talk some kind of quote-unquote surprise performers in May to see if we believe in this going forward. And it's also a talking point on why we talk about certain streamable guys in fab and what could be the upper echelon result situation. But before we go to the, I keep saying we, because you can find me on Twitter at BDNtrick, and my guest who joins me many weeks during the fab review series. You can find his work over at Sports Ethos, and he's on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how we doing, my friend?
Hey, Bubba, I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me on again. It's good to be back after a couple weeks off, not only for me, but the show too. And hopefully there's a lot of news to cover. And definitely some interesting names that you put on the outline today. We were talking about some of the guys that are on here. It's just funny how well they've performed lately. And it's been one of those years.
It has definitely been one of those years. That is a great way to put it. But before we get there, we did have like one listener question. I'm going to bring it to the forefront here because we haven't talked about it in a while. I heard you have a good main event team right now. So let's say it's about a third of the way through the season, 2 months into the year. How we look at Mr. Ben? Do we have a team in the running these days?
Not cool to drop this on me after we just talked for like 10 minutes and even mentioned a thing about it. But Todd Whitestone commented on my retweet, and Todd's great. He was actually one of the hosts for my first podcast when I was on with Rob D a couple years ago. And so Todd does the main event fab review for FTN weekly, and he asked to comment, or for me to comment, about my main event team that's currently winning its league. So I have three this year. He was nice enough to leave out the other two that aren't winning. But yeah, I have one right now. It wasn't the one that I thought would be my best main going into the season. Like you draft your teams typically and you kind of have a favorite or two. And the one that was my favorite was actually been my worst performing main event so far this year. And actually my worst team in terms of standing. But this one is, it was my second one that I drafted, my second main event. And I have the mascot on this team.
That's fitting.
Yeah, it's he's been very valuable. I don't know. So right now I'm in first place with 109 league points. It got as high as 120 league points a few weeks ago, and it was 25th overall. But since then, it had a couple bad weeks of pitching, and it dropped out of the top 100. But now I'm sitting 97th overall with 109 league points. And it's actually a pretty loaded main event. Like they all are, but this is Toby's CLQ is in here. Mike the Mouse in here. Tyler Young, who's a great NFBC player. Mark the Mondo, who's I think he listens to all your shows. He's a good guy. And Brent Hershey's on here. He's sharing a team with John Lamberis. Andrew McQuiston's in here. So yeah, it's definitely a tough league, and it's good to be on top right now. Only have $330 with fab left, so I got to be frugal going on here on out. But I like how it's sitting right now. I like the staff and the hitting. I have Lindor, so I'm hoping that he continues to get hot, because I have a lot of guys with low averages, and average is like my worst category by far, and trying to fix that moving forward.
You mentioned you have 330 left in fab, out of curiosity.
Did I lose you, Bubba, or did you lose me?
It's okay. That's a me thing. This is StreamYard's been real goofy lately. This is the fun part of StreamYard. You mentioned you have 330 left in fab. What was like your big purchase? Like what do you think was the one? And obviously, did it work out for you?
Yeah, so let me go back to come of the week. So this is the team where I had Adbert Azulay, and I don't know if you saw me tweeting about how annoyed I was with his usage before he got hurt. So the big ad that I had to start was Hector Neris. And I also – actually, no. So this is also the team where I spent $100 on Josh Young with no runner-up when I was shooting the mark a little bit. I'm holding on to him because I think if Young comes back with this team, it could really get a nice boost. But I spent about $180 on Mark Leiter Jr. and Hector Neris the week that Azulay kind of lost the job. So that was a big chunk of my fab went towards those two ads. Plus the young, that's like almost $300 probably right there. And then nothing else really too big along the way. A lot of like mid, I don't know, like 40s, 50s, and then a lot in the teens and single digits. So it's really been those three moves that have kind of taken the big chunk out of my team or out of my fab budget.
Yeah, that's not bad. They're pretty good moves, especially if Young comes back and rakes the way he can. That could be a pretty big thing. And for those that are listening or watching live, just so you know, StreamYard's been acting up for a couple of weeks. I talked to other people, same thing. So my feed will go out for like 10 seconds here and there. Hopefully not often. Just did a show. No instances. Here we are, 5 minutes in, already having one. So just letting you know, do my best, but that's just where we are. So fun stuff, though. Looking forward to seeing where this thing lands. We'll maybe update it here in a bit and ignore the comments in the comment section. He does not know what he's talking about right now. But let's talk about some news that dropped right before the show. And you mentioned, I believe you have some shares in your Yahoo League. I was finalizing a roster. Like there's one team I had left right after you mentioned it. He's in that lineup. Not anymore. And that is Robert Gasser of the Milwaukee Brewers, who he's hitting the IL with an elbow injury. I'm reading up on, he's having a second opinion on it, which is not great at all. But it says with the Robert Gasser, not so good news. Like that's how some of the headlines from beat reporters are going right now. This doesn't feel great, Ben. So you can't drop him now, not till next week, unless you're in a daily league, like you might be with Yahoo or something. But, and by Sunday, I think we'll know how severe this is. But Gasser is starting to show signs. This is a real bummer. So what's our thoughts on Gasser?
Yeah, you kind of just nailed it. You can't really do much right now unless, like you mentioned, you're in a daily league. And the note that I saw on his Yahoo page was that this is what he dealt with to start the year as well. That's why he had a delayed start to the season, Gasser. So it's not too good when he's injured again, kind of like with I think this happened to Musgrove. Or there's been a couple pitchers that have had the same injury flare up again. And usually doesn't end too well, but yeah, after a couple of rocky outings, I know like he didn't get a lot of strikeouts, but he put together a nice couple in his last couple starts. So it's unfortunate the Brewers already have an awful rotation as it is, and they can't really afford to lose someone else if they want to contend. But it could mean more of their minor leaguers get called up if he does go on the IL, Gasser.
This definitely means the minor league bump could be in play, which would be very, very nice. As you said, as a whole, it's just a not great situation is the nicest way I can put this one. But we'll have to wait and see where the final news is. Hopefully, it just feels like even if it's not surgery, it's going to be a month or so. Like, I have to shut him down, give him a shot, like Jordan Romano, do the whole song and dance. It's going to be a while where most formats, it probably will be a drop. It's just a bad sense of the situation, but we'll have to kind of wait and see on that one. Ben, Uncle Ted in the chat says, I bet Elvis Peguero gets more save chances from Milwaukee. We'll see. Peguero got one. I believe Paredes got one. McGill's back. He's day-to-day. Any day, he'll be back. So we'll see what Milwaukee does in those scenarios for the time being. All right, before we get to the fab review, I thought it'd be kind of fun to, you know, it is June 3rd now, so we've finished the month of May. And, you know, Fangraphs has a player rater. Rasball has a player rater. I'm tinkering with the Fangraphs one right now. I wish, just if anybody cares, and most won't, if anybody would be able to do a player rater that you can select dates on, that would be amazing. But I did the last 30 days on June 1st, so basically the month of May, give or take, for the player rater. And I selected a few names from each position that stood out, like in the top 10. If you're in the outfield or starting pitching, in the top 20 that stood out there. I'm like, huh, let's discuss this, because these are players we either discussed in previous fab shows, as someone picked up and rolled the dice with us a stream. Some held them, some didn't. We'll see how that one goes. But we'll start with one of the big names that is panning out in a huge way, Ben. A huge, huge way. And that is David Fry of the Cleveland Guardians. Like, Bo Naylor's been a disappointment, and people think, oh, Fry is a catcher. He's catcher eligible. But the dude plays first base, plays outfield. It's either Hedges or Naylor catching every day. So there's a world where Fry and Naylor can both exist. That's the fun part, if Naylor could ever hit. But when you look at David Fry and you look at his month of May, he was a top 10 catcher on the player rater. And over the month, he hit .387 with 7 homers and 3 steals with a 17.5% walk rate and 15% K rate in 80 plate appearances. Those are like godly video game numbers, Ben. I think we can both agree, before I let you run with this, he can't sustain that for an entire season. But how good could David – like, do you believe David Fry is still going to be good enough to be a staple on a fantasy roster?
It's kind of wild. So I'm looking at his month total strictly for May right now. He had 11 strikeouts and 13 walks. So I was trying to see if he was striking out a lot and had – or relatively a lot and then had a lot of BABIP luck. He has a lot of BABIP luck. I think it was over 400 for the month. But he's walking more than he struck out, which is awesome. That's like an elite hitter right there. So I don't know. Like, he's 29. At least he's playing almost all the time now. I was looking at his game log, and after playing sporadically to start the month off, he had a stretch at the end where he started six games in a row in the heart of the lineup, fourth or fifth. So he's definitely getting the playing time now, and the Guardians are trying to see what he can become. I guess I really don't know where he came from. It's only his second major league season, it looks like, and he's almost matched his career total from last year. He had 57 games last year for the Guardians. This year he's at 41 already. If you were to add Fry, I guess you just got to keep playing him. I was hesitant because I thought he'd be one of those guys where you add him after the hot streak and then you kind of get nothing. But I think people added him early enough where they got some of the hot streak. And he's not going to hit this high all year. I mean, maybe he'll hit like 280 here on out, if that. I mean, that'd be great still, especially from the catcher position. And he is stealing, like you mentioned. He had 3 steals. So he's definitely valuable. And I mean, I wouldn't try to play him at the other positions that he's eligible, but as long as he's playing every day, just stick him in that catcher spot.
That's a great point there. He's primarily a catcher for me as well. And I wish I would have added him to more places. I just hung on to Naylor a little too long, but between Naylor, Ivan Herrera, a couple other guys, they all fizzled out here for now, which I still believe in the skill sets of these guys, but they need to fine tune some things. I added Fry where I could, I wish I had more, to be honest, because I do think at the catcher position, even when he regresses back to where he probably will, still going to be a very good ball player, like for fantasy purposes, especially with the ability to play all over the diamond. Like we talked about, like, this is Dalton Varsho, folks, power, speed, average, not catching. Like, this is what you want in your catcher. So I'm a fan of what we're seeing from him. As Dr. Doom says in the chat, Yainer is struggling, but I don't know if you make that move. Yainer is the last one I'm still like slightly holding on to, but I almost cut him in 12s this past week. What would you do with Yainer Diaz, Ben? Would you cut the cord on him in a 12? Like, 15s you're holding. There's no real replacement there. But in a 12 or less, what would you do there?
So I only have Yainer in a DC, so I'm kind of stuck with playing him every day, which is good and bad. Yeah, no homers, 200 in the month of May.
It's brutal.
But I think it looks like it was BABIP. So he had 15 strikeouts in April, 94 at-bats. And then in May, he had 15 strikeouts and 85 at-bats with a 200 average. So I think he got a little unlucky. I don't know if his hard hit rate went down, Yainer Diaz's. But, the power isn't there. I think people were, me included, we were hoping for a little more, for some good power out of Diaz with that good average. But, definitely in a 15, I would still hold. But I guess it depends on how good the options are in the 12 team. And if it's a one-catcher league, I could see dropping him. If it's a 2, I think that's still kind of deep where he probably could turn it around quickly. Kind of with the same thing with the Fry comment I was saying, how like I was waiting for Fry to not be as good anymore. So I was hesitant to add him after the sporadic playing time. I could see Diaz getting hot once someone drops him. Then you're kind of kicking yourself.
Yep, I'm with you on the Diaz part. And the biggest thing is the replacements. Like, when I was able to drop Naylor and stuff, there was Fry. Or I take a chance on Francisco Alvarez, who's coming back here in like a week, stuff like that kind of stood out. Whereas in other formats, like I still have him. Like Uncle Ted mentioned Corey Lee. That's a guy I've been talking about for a few weeks now. Like, I love Corey Lee. He's in that conversation as well. So I'm cool there. He's saying Victor Caratini, Dr. Doom saying he's fool's gold. If Victor Caratini beats me, I'm going to let him beat me. That's fine. Like, I'm not going to, I might as well add Martin Maldonado while you're at it and see where things go. But it's tough. And as Stephen Crawford in the chat says, I dropped Diaz for Fry in a 10 team a few weeks ago. That's great. 10 team league. That's a perfectly good situation. 15s is probably no replacement value. 12s, like Ben said, and especially in OCs, we joke about it in the fab. It's so league dependent. Like, I've had Corey Lee and David Fry available for a couple weeks, and I grabbed one. Where in other ones where I have Yainer Diaz, there's nothing. Like, it's just, I'm not doing the Caratini thing. Not for Diaz. Like, you got to upgrade, not go across or a drop off situation. All right, more catcher talk here. You know, guys, my favorite. Let's talk about Danny Jansen, who we've kind of all, most of us, I should say, have thought, you know, he's a very good hitter when healthy. It's just health has been the issue. Well, in May, he had 85 plate appearances, five more than David Fry. Jansen hit 293, three home runs, looked good overall. This is kind of what you want to see from a catcher too, potentially. What are we thinking on Jansen? Because like I said, I think most of us can agree we like the talent. It's just stay healthy.
Right, but now you have him and he is healthy, so you might as well just keep playing Jansen. I actually added Jansen in my 12-team one-catcher league to replace MJ Melendez, who was catcher eligible. And I was happy I made that switch because Jansen has been very good. He hit 293 in the month of May. And seems to be, he had 75 at bats, so that's on the level of Yiner, just slightly below. So there's no issue with a platoon or split with Kirk. I think Kirk's just been, I don't have Kirk, so I don't know how he's been doing, but I think he's been doing bad. Yeah, so there's no threat to Jansen's playing time right now. And his stat cast looks great. It's all red again, which is why people were always interested in taking Jansen in those mid 200 picks. So yeah, it's just cross your fingers that he stays healthy and hopefully the Blue Jays can keep him in the lineup at the DH spot. Or, well, now that Vlad's playing third and Turner's playing first, they might be trying to get Jansen in the lineup more often. I don't know what the lineup looked like when that happened, but I mean, it could only help.
Yes, it can't hurt, that's for sure. As a whole, the Jays lineup has been pretty disappointing. They've played better the last couple of weeks. Not like Bichette's warmed up. Vlad's not playing well, but Springer's starting to hit again. Turner's been a disappointment. It's like an up and down roller coaster in that lineup. But yeah, Jansen's been one of the good ones. Jansen hits second while David Schneider hits first. Like, if we talked about that in March, those are your 1-2 hitters in Toronto, that would stand out like a big, whoa, what is going on? But hey, they're both producing, so enjoy it. Now a big whoa, what's going on, is a guy that I liked a lot in the late rounds as a corner infielder. I know I've dropped him in a few leagues, have him in some still, and that is Josh Bell. And that's why doing these lists to me are a lot of fun, because you start to realize, man, these guys are playing way better than I thought. In the month of May, Josh Bell hit 311 with three home runs, 18 RBIs, like only nine runs scored, no stolen bases. So like usually, he's not a five-category stud. But man, that batting average, that's a little bit of pop, good at bat, good RBIs as a corner infielder. That's impressive. But what are we thinking when we look at Josh Bell? Like, he can't do this for four more months, can he?
Well, the thing with Bell is that if I'm sure you've rostered Bell in the past, but if anyone has rostered Josh Bell, they probably know that he usually is awful in the first half and then picks up in the second half after you drop him. So he's actually turning it up a little bit earlier this year, which is nice because I have Bell in a DC, and I was trying to there's been periods where I sat him just for whoever else I had him as my backup corner or first baseman. But now he's been a staple in my lineup because he keeps going like 3-for-4 and 2-for-4. He's been doing really well. And one of the reasons I liked Bell going in the drafts was he was going around pick 300, but he was projected for full-time playing time on the Marlins, and he was going to hit like probably second. And I think he's kind of been hitting at the top lineup still. So it's pretty valuable to get those plate appearances from a pick that late. And he's always had the power, Bell, but it's just a matter of him, like, getting the ball in the air consistently. And he's a good pickup, like, especially with the way first base has been lately, a lot of injuries. And, like, if you had Torkelson, yeah, but I'm sure if Bell's available in a league that you drop Torkelson, I doubt you have Torkelson still because he's been awful. But that's a good replacement, though, if that's an option. The year-to-date average is still a little poor for Bell, 243, but he just hit so poorly to start out the year. That's probably, so if he was dropped, it was understandable, considering where he was getting drafted. But, yeah, from here on out, I think he's a solid pick or a solid player to play at your corner or first base.
Yep. No, this was like one of my strategies all draft season is, you know, Rizzo, Bell, corner infielder late in drafts, if not first base and corner. Rizzo needs to do what Bell's doing now, because he's really not got it going. It's been a rough go there, but Bell's getting it going. And like you said, he's streaky. He does just enough to where the back of the baseball card looks pretty good by the end of the year, like more often than not every year, but more often than not, like you said. So a lot of good stuff there. This one's a fun one. Very popular name. I've mentioned this guy more in the first 2 months of the season on the First Pitch podcast than I think I did ever. You can combine all of last season to this. And that is Nolan Gorman of the St. Louis Cardinals, who was playing so bad that he was basically in a platoon, strong side for the Cardinals, started hitting the ball better. He's playing a little more often versus lefties, not every day, but still playing more often. In the month of May, Nolan Gorman hit 242. Okay, nothing too crazy. But he also had six home runs, 16 runs scored, 13 RBIs, two steals, struck out 37%. Like, it is such an up and down, what do we believe in when it comes to Nolan Gorman? Because we've always believed the hit tool's there, but it's been that swing and strike rate since he was in the minor leagues. That's been the discussion. And here we are again, Ben. So what are your thoughts on Nolan Gorman, who had a really strong month of May? You know, if you shrink it down to like the last 10 to 15 days, he's hitting like almost 340 or something. But what's your thoughts on Nolan Gorman?
Yeah, the strikeout rate is still there, though. That's the thing that I can't look past. So he had 29 strikeouts in 85 April at bats. He had 29 strikeouts in 66 May at bats. Gorman did, and that's pushing 50%. If luckily he walked 12 times, so it's maybe like high 30s. But that's, you can't sustain like a anywhere decent average if you strike out that often. And the two steals was nice. I never took Gorman for a speedster, but that's helpful. And he had good runs in RBI, 16 runs, 13 RBI. But there's a lot of red on the Statcast, like for the barrel rate, 95th percentile. But he's first percentile in K rate on the year, 36%, which is just, like I said, he's going to be a headache, I think. He'll be streaky probably, like a lot of other players. But I don't know. I don't know if he's playing against lefties. Probably not.
Very little. He's started to, but not consistently.
Yeah, he started the last two games batting eighth against lefties when the Cardinals face a lefty starter. So, I mean, at least he's playing, but I don't know if he wanted to play against lefties. That's a thing, too. Probably strikes out even more when he faces a lefty. But if you had Gorman, I would be thankful that you got what you just got from him. But I'm still not confident that he'll be too valuable going forward.
Sell high, folks. Sell high while you can. All right. Let's talk about a fun one, though. Like you mentioned, I didn't picture Nolan Gorman for a speedster. Well, I didn't picture Dylan Moore for a home run hitter, not a speedster. I thought it was the other way around with Dylan Moore. But in the month of May, thanks to injuries to Jorge Polanco and J.P. Crawford, he got to play every day, Dylan Moore did. And he's actually producing, so now they're finding ways to put him in the outfield. Now Polanco's hurt again. Like, they're making a point to keep Dylan Moore in the lineup, which is great to see. And in the month of May, Moore hit 241, which, you know, kind of standard for him. Five homers, though, three stolen bases, 12 runs, 16 ribbies. That's great. But what I like to see, only a 22% K rate, over 11% walk rate. Like, some of the initial things you look at with like a BABIP and things, you don't see a ton of like, okay, he like got super lucky scenarios. So what's your thoughts on Dylan Moore? Because if he could hit 245 and give me 5-5 every month, I think that's pretty strong the rest of the way.
No, I agree with that. 245 would be a great target for Moore, considering that he's only hit above that once in his career, 2020 in the shortened season, 255 in 38 games. Other than that, he's been 224 below. So he's definitely a risk to hurt your average. If you already have a poor average, then be wary of that. If it's 245, like we were saying, I mean, that's not too bad. I know some teams have averages, fancy teams have averages for a team that are below that. So he could actually be a help in that scenario. I'm a little upset because there was a week or two ago, I needed a shortstop and I was going to add more, but then I saw that Crawford was coming back. So I either lowered my bids or I just took him off my bid list more. And like you were saying, he's been playing since then, even despite Crawford being back thanks to injury and just him being one of the best hitters for the Mariners. His XBA is for the season is 215. So he's definitely been slightly lucky, but I don't know. The pop is good for Moore. It's just and the speed too. He's actually above average in his power metrics on Baseball Savant. So maybe the power is something new that he tapped into finally. So he's definitely a good, yeah, great flexibility too, position wise. I know he has like three or four different eligibilities. So that's also helpful, but kind of like with Gorman, I don't know if he strikes out as much as Gorman, but Moore could hurt your average. Like I said, just be careful going forward.
Yeah, it's about half the rate, 21% K rate for Moore in the month of May. So that's promising. It's a point in the right direction for Dylan Moore. Something you mentioned there with like, if he's like, oh, if he hits 245, that's better than most teams. We're at this point of the year where we're looking at standings more closely. Probably you're looking at what stats you might need compared to other stats, ratio stats in general, not going to say batting average only, but ratio stats in general, they're tough to gain a lot back from. If you're going to, you'd better start soon to get the 4 months to gain them back. You could blow them real quickly with ERAs, and like you can go get Gomberg or something. That's very, very possible. But when you mentioned how like, hey, he might have a better average than some teams, are you as concerned at this point of the year, like picking up players that, you know, they're like, okay, they might hit me 220, but they got power speed. We're going to go for the, you know, three other categories and worry about that and just average is what it is. Or are you still like, you're in first place in the main, for crying out loud? You're probably concerned about everything. So how do you approach the fab market in terms of certain players that might hurt you in, say, one category?
So one of the steps I do when I get ready for my weekly fab process is I go through my team standings and I kind of identify which categories I'm weak in across the four fab teams that I have. And it's in the back of my mind, but ultimately it comes down to who's available at the position that I need more. So I'm not going to add like an average guy at first base if I have three first basemen already. You know, it's got to fit to what my positional needs are. But I have been looking. I kind of do this. I don't really look in the beginning of the year, but I might even glance at it. But now it's getting to that time. So like I mentioned with my main event team, you brought up, it's low and average. So I had a Gio Urshela this week because I needed corner. And well, actually, ironically enough, I'll say now, Eugenio Suarez with Gio Urshela, and I needed batting average. And luckily with like Renjifo, I wasn't forced to start Suarez every week, and I stopped starting because I couldn't take another 200 average when I was already hurting. But I don't know. So like with the year, like the perspective, so I try to help myself positively by, okay, so we've reached a third chunk of the year. This could be our team's best third chunk of the year. It could be the middle third chunk of the year. It could be the worst third chunk of the year. So like from June through July, maybe your team hits 280 now. And what you thought was a bad average team ends up being like a middle of the road to good, a great average team. So it's all that matters. It all depends on when those stats happen. And those, I do it for quarters. I do it for thirds. You can even do like half. Okay, half of the year is done come July 1st. How's my next half going to be? Is it going to be better than my first half? Like, because you hear stories of like Rob Silver winning the overall after being 15th at the All-Star break or something like that. And in his league 15th, I think, or something like that. So I'm already being mindful of the average because it's so hard to gain because it's so easy to have those batting average drags. Like Mullins is on that team. I mentioned Lindor, who had an awful average start. But you don't want to get too buried as it goes into summer. I think you want to definitely start adjusting who you're starting and who you're adding based on definitely the ratios. Like, I mean, everyone's always trying to get a good ERA and whip. I feel like average is one of the ones where it kind of goes against the homers and the speed, like with more.
Yeah.
Like if you need homer and speed, you're going to go for those counting stats and kind of hope that your team balances out the average.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And it goes back to also kind of just trusting that, hey, your guys are healthy. They're good ball players. They might be struggling, but you got to hope they turn it around in the second half, and maybe your best batting average assets are on the team, not the waiver wire. So that's a great point. Cause it's just so hard. We talk about even during draft season, like drafting for average is such a up and down volatile stat outside of like the first couple of rounds where these guys year after year put up, you know, big average numbers. But yeah, waiver wire, tough get. So that's why I was just curious when you mentioned that. Davis Schneider, obviously leading off for the Jays, another guy that was atop the player raters here. Another guy that doesn't hit for average. In the month of May, he hit .233, but hit four home runs, drove in 17, scored 16, and had three stolen bases. Primary leadoff guy for the Toronto Blue Jays as well. He's been getting walk-off hits for them. He's lighting Toronto on fire these days. So what's your thoughts on Davis Schneider? It's a guy I loved last year, but he was platooning. Not platooning anymore.
I feel like this is a guy that you could just talk all about by yourself. Because I always hear you talking about him across all your shows. Yeah, so another like with the other guys, 219 expected average. So I think what we're seeing here is that anyone can get hot for a certain month, and it can kind of mask some of their deficiencies as a player. So in May, he actually had his lowest average, but it was just the volume was there. So he had 16 runs, 17 RBI, and four homers, three steals, David Schneider did. So that's awesome. So that kind of balanced out the low average. But yeah, 262 in April. So, I mean, if you get hit around that, that's awesome. And second base is, for me, it hasn't been as much of an issue filling that, but like if he has the outfield now, that's going to be definitely helpful, especially if you're in a five outfielder league. But just looking now, he's been leading off. So if, I mean, he's probably not available anywhere, Schneider, even in the, maybe a shallow league, but if he is, definitely add him if you need any help offensively.
It's just weird because there's so many middle infield targets, and we'll get to them in the fab. Like, there was Nick Gonzalez a lot, Hamilton, and there's more. There's a lot of interesting middle infield looks this week. There, if you put Schneider next to him, honestly, Schneider doesn't look as good as some of those guys on paper, but he's been the one producing all season, and he's top 10 in the player rater at the position. So we'll see. Maybe in June that'll flip-flop, and these guys we talk about next time will be worth the fab pickups this week, but that's the fun of the exercise. Now, the fun of the exercise for me is, like, there's certain names, you know, when you do enough stupid content like me, these guys like, yeah, I knew this guy was playing well, blah, blah, blah. This one stood out to me, and I have Willie Castro on a couple, like, deeper league teams, and I just, like, set him and forget him because of his flexibility. He helps, like, especially in DCs. He finds a way in every lineup just because of injuries. He's beautiful. That's what he's discussed for in the offseason about. Willie Castro was top 10 at three positions. Three positions, all flexibility. Now, given player raters sometimes favor, like, averages, OEPs way more than, say, counting stats. It's just how it – I don't know the perfect recipe for it. So maybe in a perfect world, he'd be a little farther. Like, if you look like Yahoo rankings, he's probably farther down, so on and so forth. But he was a top 10 in multiple positions here. I looked up his month of May. Dude, Willie Castro hit 278 with – he had a total of 10 extra base hits, two being home runs. He had five stolen bases, scored 18 runs, and drove in five. Like, so not a ton of RBIs, but not a ton of power. Two homers, you don't expect a ton. Hit for average, scored a ton of runs, five stolen bases, playing pretty much every single day all over the lineup, all over the diamond for the Twins. Willie Castro's been pretty darn awesome, Ben. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's been a staple of my DC where I have him after not really playing him at all because he was so awful to start out the year. And I even cut Castro in a fab league and kind of kicking myself now in a 15-teamer, but it was just so brutal. And I, like, the playing time wasn't guaranteed on the Twins, but they've just been so injured again that, I mean, he's found his way in the lineup consistently. And yeah, the power won't be there, like you said. A lot of blue on his Statcast, but he's there for the runs, the speed, and the average now. And his year-to-date average is only 247. His expected BA is only 247. But I think a lot of what happened in April is weighing that down. And yeah, 278 for the month. So he actually ended up finishing April pretty well, 264. I guess it's just maybe he's getting kind of lucky. But he's so fast that I could see him beating out those expected stats just from his speed alone. And I plan on keeping Willie in my lineups going forward.
Yeah, he's not coming out anytime soon. That's a beautiful thing. It's like the running joke all preseason when doing previews is Willie Castro is great for DCs because he's got multiple positions and the Twins just can't stay healthy. Then it's just like Royce Lewis is coming back Tuesday, but he's been out for a while. Correa's been hurt. Like, you just go down the list. It's like, yeah, Willie's found playing time everywhere for the reasons we mentioned. And it's a shame to see that, but we'll see what he does when Lewis does come back. They'll, you know, they sent Julian down, so technically he can go play second base. Like, there's just so many places for Willie Castro to fit, which is pretty, pretty sweet to see. Here's a fun one. We always joke about bad teams have good fantasy players. Well, the Oakland Athletics leadoff hitter, Abraham Toro, like, he was streaking to start the month out. We're like, okay, this can't last forever. Kind of did. Abraham Toro hit 315 in the month of May, over 131 plate appearances. That's not a small sample overall. That's one of the bigger plate appearances we've seen on this exercise. Three home runs, 19 runs, 10 steals, two stolen bases, only a 14.5% K rate. I don't believe it's sustainable, but holy shnikes. Like, Abraham Toro is one of those guys you picked up for like $3 and has been quite the godsend on some fantasy baseball teams in May.
For sure. His stats are kind of similar to Willie's.
Yes.
Similar run totals with the not really power being there. Willie's faster, only had three more steals. But yeah, the 315 average is so nice right now. I could have used that on that one main event team for sure. Especially when Toro was hitting 400 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. But so I brought up his weekly lines just to see what happened after those 2 weeks where he hit over 400, and 276 in week eight, then 179 week nine, and then 269. So last week, so he's doing, he kind of bounced back from that poor week nine. It's just a matter of, he has to continue to hit leadoff to have value. And he also has to hit for average because there's no speed, barely any power. But the way the hitting is right now, there's still value in that, especially since he has second and third base eligibility, Toro. And I think he's still going to be playing from here on out for the A's, right? He's on the A's.
Yes, he's on the A's.
And I remember he used to be on the Mariners. But yeah, he's a third baseman from here on out for them. And I don't see that changing. So he's a just be careful. Like, I know Ryan always likes to bring – poor Gene Segura always rips on him for being, like, the guy that kind of just, like, eats away at your team when you don't really realize what's happening. But Toro could be, like, an empty 265 average from here on out. And maybe with some decent runs if he can just hit leadoff. But just be careful of – just watch his weekly stat lines and see how Toro's doing and don't get into trouble if he starts falling off.
That's a great point. Like, he's probably not a guy you're going to drop right away, but basically put him on your bench because he will have really good weeks, especially with the right matchups. That A's team's young enough that I think they're just going to be fantasy fun for most of the season. Honestly, I don't think they're just going to completely fall away. But as long as he's leading off, there will be runs to be scored. It's just a matter of, is he stealing? Is he running? Like, there's so many – is he hitting for power? So many things like that. But I'm with you. There will be a slump for him, so be prepared for that situation with Abraham Toro. Matt Chapman of the Giants, after a pretty bad start to the season, he hit 255 in May, four homers, 23 runs scored, 13 RBIs and two stolen bases. He did a lot of the power speed damage in like a 7-day increment, but overall still scoring a ton of runs because his OBP skills are through the roof, 350 OBP in the month. So what's your thoughts on Chapman? Because I know a lot of people drafted him. It's not like, hey, we didn't think he'd be good. The struggles were so bad in April. We saw the improvements in May. Like, if he just did this every month, we'd be over the moon with the situation. But what's your thoughts on Matt Chapman?
Yeah, this is why he used to be drafted in the top 100, Chapman. People love the power potential. His stat cast is all red. It's for year-to-date. The only issue, of course, is, like, the contact metrics. But his K rate for the year is only 23%, which I think is actually really good for Chapman. And he's stealing now, which I never would have thought he'd be a – I mean, he's already – outdone his last 3 years from 22 to 24. His five this year so far in the year, and last year he had four all year. So that's good. His sprint speed is actually 85th percentile, so it's justified that he's stealing now. And it's definitely good to see him playing well because he's always been like the leaderboard or the barrel rate leaderboard guy who's like always on the wrong end of it where he's hitting so many barrels but not getting rewarded for them. But eight homers at this point, it's solid. It's like a 24 homer pace if you triple it for the year. But I think there's definitely more potential for the homers. But it's just the home park he plays in, and as long as he has to pull the ball, of course. But yeah, I think Chapman, especially like we mentioned with corner infield, I think Chapman's someone to definitely stick in your lineup going forward. There's no reason to sit him, and he's definitely doing well right now.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on that one. A few more to go here. Matt Vierling has been on fire. He's sitting on Monday night, which is a bummer, but getting the day off. But in the month of May, Vierling hit 306, five home runs, 13 runs, 21 RBIs. Doesn't run, so you don't have that going for you. Third base outfield eligibility is really nice, that CI outfield situation. Vierling, I have on a lot of DCs, don't have a ton of fab shares of him, but I like what we've seen so far. What's your thoughts on what we've seen from Matt Vierling?
I think most of that value came in that doubleheader when he had like however many homers, like two homers
home runs or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like the 26th, he had two homers, three runs, four RBI. Then on the doubleheader, the 29th, he had two homers, five RBI, three runs. Yeah. It's most of his month is production right there in 2 days. Yeah. Like Vierling, I feel like he's kind of like a Toro where like Vierling has barely stolen all year. One of his things I remember when he was on the Phillies was that he had like a power speed profile, but he's not stealing, and I don't know if the power is legit, especially in Detroit because it's a bigger ballpark, and also I don't trust the playing time maybe as much because the way that the Tigers they're juggling everyone around. Torgelson will be back eventually. They have all these outfield guys like Badu has been called up. They have Green. It seems like Wenzel Perez is going to be playing full time now. They have Kana, who's an outfielder corner guy. I don't know. And then they called up Justin Henry Molloy, who's an outfielder. They have all these guys who kind of play the same position. And I don't know. I think it's just like a temporary thing where Vierling will be super relevant, especially in shallower leagues. Like he's 100% rostered in the main event, which is justified considering the depth of those leagues. But yeah, in a shallower league, I don't foresee Vierling being too valuable going forward. I mean, definitely had a great month, but I just don't know if it's going to stick.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I like Virlino Locke. I liked him for his flexibility. That's why I took him in DCs. To be a full-time dude, not 100% sold on that one just yet. But, hey, the one thing I will mention, and I brought it up on other shows, the Detroit Tigers are actually a very good offense right now. Like, they have, like, I think it's a 110 or higher WRC plus versus righties over the last month. Like, they are producing as a team, which helps everybody in the lineup as they get going. So that is a positive. It's a young team. I know that we speculated early in the year or even last season, like, they're close to being relevant. And you mentioned all those outfielders. Parker Meadows is crushing it in AAA. There's no room for him at the end right now in Detroit, which maybe he's a 4A guy. We'll see. But they have a lot of options, as you mentioned. Colt Keith is starting to swing it well. Like, there's even, you mentioned Malloy. Malloy can play third base also if he has to. Like, he's played third base and outfield. Like, if Vierling struggles, there's options. But, like, out of the names we've mentioned, well, I want to mention the next guy first. We'll go there. Joey Ortiz. Well,
I was going to say, yeah. Vierling sat tonight for Malloy in the lineup. So see, who knows if it's on a stick.
Okay. Yep. That'll make things even more interesting, in fact. Let's talk Joey Ortiz, who a lot of us said, okay, they traded him to Milwaukee, sweet, third base. Then he doesn't really get playing time to start the year. But now he is. Now he's playing. And in the month of May, Ortiz hit .307 with 4 homers, 16 runs, 12 RBIs, a stolen base. Plate discipline was awesome. 10% walk, 12.5% K. There's a lot to like about Joey Ortiz, it feels like. But in the minors, there's always the hit tool. Could everything else come together? Seems like it is slowly coming together. So, Ben, what are your takeaways from what we saw from Joey Ortiz in the month of May?
I wish he did this in April when I added him in 15-teamers. But yep, at least now fair. I'm playing him in my DC where I got him. I have Curlin to thank for that, because I remember talking to Curlin during draft season at the end, and he was – I think the trade had just occurred or was about to happen or before it even happened, and Mike was on Ortiz as a DC target. And I have him to thank for that. But, yeah, he's – the issue when he was on the Orioles was, like, the left field fence with the power, and I didn't know how he would profile, but the speed hasn't been there, but the average is so good. He only struck out 11 times in May, Ortiz did, and the runs were nice, 16 runs, 12 RBI. You love to see that. And the versatility, like some of the other guys we mentioned, second and third base eligibility in NFBC is awesome. So I'm going to keep playing Ortiz in the DC where I have him. But, yeah, I wish I could have gotten – it was the right move to drop him when I did, I think. It was just because they weren't playing him. They had, like, all those third basemen in Milwaukee, but I think Ortiz is legit, so keep playing him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's very legit. I don't see him going anywhere barring something stupid in Milwaukee, which I hope does not happen, because there's 7 games in the lead in the NL Central right now, which is bonkers considering that now they might lose Gasser too. Like, there's a lot of pitching issues, but they keep producing thanks to the GOAT, William Contreras, playing pretty much every day and telling Tommy Pham to get out of town. So what I was going to ask you before that, so we mentioned a bunch of these kind of flashier players, and I'm just going to group them together and tell me which one you'd want the most out of this. Joey Ortiz, Matt Vierling, Abraham Toro. Who would you want the most out of that group?
Ortiz.
Okay. So now I'm going to go Ortiz, Willie Castro, Dylan Moore.
Who? I'm going to say Ortiz. It's close between him and Castro. They're very similar, I think.
That's fair. It's just funny to me, because after we did that whole thing, I'm looking back, like, there's a lot of kind of similar skill sets we saw all, like, produce in the month of May. Like, these kind of guys were some expectations early, didn't really pan out, then they did in May. Similar, like, hitters, like, little power, little speed. It was an interesting look at this those guys there. A couple more I wanted to mention real quick before we start the FAB recap. I just want to mention this one because it's just so funny to me every time I see this stat line. Kevin Pillar. Yes, that Kevin Pillar, who even on Fangraphs still doesn't have a team. If you go to his player page, just blank team. He's only been with the Angels for a month. He actually arrived on May 1st, which is pretty ironic. So for the month of May, Kevin Pillar, dude hit .409, 5 home runs, 14 runs, 21 stolen bases. And the one thing, a lot of this is surprise, the average is surprise. Dude stole 4 stolen bases. Like, that I didn't even see coming from Kevin Pillar. Now, in any world do I see this continuing? No. But, like, you know, he could hit .260 and give you 4 home runs a month. That would never shock me if they're going to keep playing him every day. Is that worth it? Who knows? But what's your thoughts when you see Kevin Pillar's line and all this, like going forward with him?
So with most players, I have, like, a picture in my mind when I think of their name of, like, what they should be. And I have no clue with Pillar anymore. I feel like he should be retired by now. Yeah. It's kind of wild. And I'm trying to look right now. So roster resources has him on the bench actually right now going forward. And I think that's because Shanwell's there. I mean, Pilar's going to be fighting Joe Adell for playing time probably. And maybe even Moniak. So Pilar will be in there against righties or lefties, excuse me. I don't know. It's just like, I'm sure all his production, Pilar's, is out the window now. I don't see him being good at this point in his career going forward. I mean, if the Angels want to try to get him playing time and hope this sticks so that they can flip him eventually, I can see that happening. But I don't know. He's 35, Pilar is, and I don't know. He hit 180-something in April, and now he's starting to hit 180 already in two games. Well, I mean, it's only two games, but he's 1-for-6, so he's under 200 already start June. It's not even worth mentioning, but it's just funny to see, like, 182, 409, 167 on his month-by-month breakdown. But, I don't see it sticking.
It was so goofy with the Angels besides many things. Like, that's just a whole organization that's fun of jokes. Like, Pilar's platooning with Willie Calhoun, who is not playing well at all, but they platoon hit cleanup. Like, his team is just mind-boggling at times. Joe Adell's in a massive slump. Like, that's why he was not on this list. There's a lot going on there. And, you know, Shanwell, who was hitting well, now he's got a thumb injury, and he was struggling before he got hurt. Like, there's a whole lot of not good in Anaheim. And I'm with you. I think they've been trying to trade Pilar as long as since he hit that first home run. But we'll see if it pans out on this one. We'll leave the pitchers for later. I just put a couple on there because they were surprising. But I want to move on to the fab for the week, because we were kind of joking off air that this was a more entertaining week than weeks past because it's been kind of slow of late. And as usual, folks, we will recap the RotoWire Online Championship, 12-team leagues. Kind of gives you a base between the 10s and the 15s, just an idea of what's going on. And if you're new to the show, just remember, it's the Wild West. You're going to get a lot of goofy bids, so there's no rhyme or reason half the time in these 12s. This is more of a discussion point and me to make fun of people. That's pretty much what this is for. But we'll start with the most added player this week. With Jordan Romano going down, who, if anybody missed the news on Monday, he got another shot in his elbow, which means he will not throw for 5 to 7 days. And this is the same thing that happened to him in spring training, which made him miss basically a month. So keep that in mind with Romano. It might be longer for the second go-around. We'll see. But what we got here from the most added player is Jimmy Garcia. He was added in 208 leagues. It's pretty much all of your leagues in the OCs. Max, 204. That was a bit much, but low of 9. Respectable. I'm there. Even Uncle Ted in the chat says Chad Green should be the guy. We'll see. Jimmy got the save on Sunday, but it wasn't pretty. Let's put it that way. But he got the save. What are your thoughts on Jimmy Garcia going forward? Because I get the aggressiveness just for the fact there hasn't been a lot of chances to grab saves for a long period of time this year.
Yeah, so this ad, I think, would be more about Romano than it is Garcia, because Romano already had the elbow injury to start the year, and now he's hurt again, and that does not sound like ideal at all. So I know Mike, to bring up Mike again, we were talking about he needed a closer, and I think I was talking to Lucas Beery as well. Like he went in on Jimmy, and I would have too if I had lost. Well, obviously, if you had Romano, you're going to go for Jimmy. But I mean, if you need a closer help, I think he's a solid spec. But even like across the weeks we've discussed so far this year, a lot of these injury guys, you just don't know how long you're going to have them for. And like Uncle Ted was saying, like Chad Green also had saves at 1.2 when Romano was first hurt. But I don't know. It's getting to the point now, though, where you kind of have to decide if you're going to make that splash if you need saves. I think it was about this time last year when I punted in the one team. And like Jimmy's stats are very good at 1.5 ERA, 0.7 whip on the year. So he definitely earned the right to be the closer going forward if he has to be. It's just how long is it going to last? And I think it's I'd probably bet like 55 to 45, 60 to 40 that Romano's done for a while. But I don't know. It's just hard to, with a little limited information, it's hard to like make that call right now, I think.
And it's not like the Jays are contending. So it comes to a point when if he could come back, are we rushing him back? Like, what are we doing here? So I'm with you. And something you said is kind of, it was with me as well this week, is knock on wood, I didn't really need closers. So that kind of boded well for me. Like, I've speculated on some guys. I almost have a closer on my bench every week. right now, which feels nasty because it's always the week they get a bunch of saves and you sit there and get pissed off and it's like, oh, what am I doing? But you can't drop them because you don't want to give them to anybody else. So it's like it's the worst world to be in on those points in time. So I wasn't really in on Jimmy, but I agree with everything you said. It's like, he's good. How good is he going to be? Chad Green's there. It's pretty tough there, but I'm with you. As Ryan Bloomfield said in the chat, he said, props on the Jimmy pronunciation. I was triple digits in most of my 15-teamers. Just hasn't been much closer impact. Yeah, that's kind of what Ryan and I even talked about last Thursday. It's just been a year where there hasn't been a lot out there, which has been pretty interesting. This one was fun because Matt Waldron, I made fun of early in the year, like knuckleballer, not that great and whatever. Like even though I had him in DCs, weirdly enough, because he was free. But what I like, he struggled early. Like I made fun of him because he just wasn't good. But something has clicked of late with Matt Waldron. And with a knuckleballer, it is literally a game-to-game situation because if it's not knuckling, he's throwing worse than batting practice. But over Waldron's last four starts, 23 innings, 5 earned, 31 Ks. That's been very effective. He had a nice two-step this week coming up starting on Monday. Waldron was added in 170 leagues, as high as $82, as low as a dollar. When we recap our fab, I was in on Waldron where I could get him potentially. What were your thoughts on Matt Waldron this week?
Just because I played in the 15s, I already had Waldron in the spot or two. I added him for the Marlins start last week, and that went very well. I think he had 7 scoreless, 8 Ks, got the win. And then once I saw who he's facing this week, I'm like, hey, well, I'm just going to roll back to that well. And so on the year, Waldron has some actually pretty decent underlying numbers. So his xERA is 3.53, FIP 3.46, xFIP 3.78. And so those are all very good numbers. I did post a tweet. I don't know if you saw it the other day. I think it was on Monday or Sunday, about how reliable those metrics have been. I was looking at xFIP and Sierra versus qualified starters ERAs this year, and how those stats compared to last year up to this point. And they're actually a lot less reliable. I guess the environment is to blame for that with the ball. That's kind of what the theory is, I guess. But so when we look at these pitcher underlying stats that we love the site, everyone loves to do it. Just be a little cautious. But with that said, though, I love this Waldron ad. I think I have him on 3 of my 4 NFBC fab teams for this week. So I was all in as well with this one.
Yep, that's interesting. Very, very interesting. So the part about the stats, I did not know that. I missed your tweet on that one, so I'll have to go check that out. But
yeah,
that is telling. But yeah, I do like the Waldron part. That is for sure. And I that's why I agree. I was looking at this like earlier work, I guess you could say, and it's gotten so much better as the season's gone on. All right, let's talk Mark Vientos. Finally happened. Many of us have been clamoring for this forever. Brett Baty back to AAA. Vientos getting the call. Picked up in 144 leagues, as high as 123, as low as a dollar. Since Vientos was recalled on the 15th, and now he's playing every day, but since he's recalled, 306, 3 homers. That's pretty good. How excited were you about Mark Vientos? You know, being the – I know you're a Yankee fan, but you got to be hearing a lot of it up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, it's funny. Just the way the Mets handle him and Baty, like it's always one or the other. It's never both of them. And I kind of feel bad for Vientos and Baty. But Vientos has been playing really well lately. I don't think he was really available for me in 15s. I think he was available in one league, but I didn't really need a third baseman in that one. So I didn't go after Vientos. But I could see why, with the way we mentioned already before, how corner has been this year. Definitely a good ad, and hopefully Vientos continues to produce and stays in the lineup and actually stays on the team, because as we all know, that it's no guarantee with the Mets.
Yep. No, that's the biggest thing. Run it while it's hot. Like, I believe the skill set is there, but it's the Mets and anything can happen. He could be traded. I doubt he is. He's free. Like, this might be the one guy out of like the 15 that aren't, but right. They came out with a list, I believe it was Sunday, of like the 12 guys that they're shopping right now. And I'm like,
oh, I didn't even see that. Like, I saw it's a big list.
Yeah, they had a list of them. Beat reporter put it out, and I'm sitting there going, "It's June 2nd. You're telling your fan base you're already giving up. That is not good. That's not good."
Well, the fans that I know already gave up themselves, so it's about time the team has followed suit, I guess.
That's fair. That's a valid point. This one is one of those where I'll wait for the other shoe to drop, but I guess run hot while you can. Maybe he goes full Kevin PR on you. Miguel Andujar. I hope Ryan's still listening. This is his boy. Picked up in 141 leagues, as high as 191, okay, as low as a dollar. Andujar was called up on May 24th, and he's hit 394 with two homers and 12 RBIs. Most impressive thing, Ben, 5.9% strikeout rate over that run. Like that, I'm like, whoa, where did this come from, Andujar? And Bloomfield says he was not the 191, so that's good to know. What are your thoughts on this one? Because I don't know what to think. But then again, it's the A's who just keep scoring. Like they keep putting up runs, so it's weird.
Yeah, so I had a couple bids for Andujar, but for like less than $20, because I was kind of alluding to this idea earlier, talking about dividing the season into like halves, thirds, quarters.
Yep.
You're adding Andujar after this massive stretch. So then what's he going to do from here on out? He's not going to hit 300 because he's never shown that he can do that. Even though he had a great hit tool he came up with the Yankees and then injury kind of derailed his career. But if you look at what he's done since that rookie year where he got snubbed out of the rookie of the year, like all mid 200s averages, like it's, yes, the playing time is there right now for the A's, but like with Tyler Nevin, how long is it going to last? He's off the team now, Nevin. And also, Andujar, he always was like the short side of the platoon with the Pirates. So he even when he did play well, you couldn't really rely on him to be in there all the time. And it's a lot of money. I mean, 191 is a lot of money for him. And I don't know. I would like to see him do well because I always thought he had it in him to be a good hitter, but you got to be a little more realistic, I think. And look at what he's done. But you mentioned the K rate, so that's also really promising. But I don't think you can expect that to stick long term.
Yeah, like I'm excited for it. I would ride it while you can. But when I say ride it while you can, it's like no more than $20 probably. Like it's right. I'm streaming. Like when we recap mine, I have a ton of just like, hey, I got good numbers this week. We're having some fun. We're rotating things around. I'm not breaking the bank for Miguel. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. Like I said, maybe he'll go full Kelvin Pillar and he'll have a month that's worth every dollar for the rest of the season type thing. Like that's fun. I don't see it. Uncle Ted in the chat made a good one here. Trevor Larnach is 1% roster in Yahoo. It's nuts. I agree. I'm actually sick of promoting Trevor Larnach every single week in all my content because no one rosters him, even in OCs. He's like, I think he's close to 50 to 60% now. It's bonkers to me. But whatever. Yahoo's got a lot of small leagues and whatnot, which makes it tougher to roster Larnach. All right, Ben Brown. This price might have been higher before Sunday start, but I don't think so. I think people still wanted some Ben Brown. Picked up in 133 leagues, as high as 203, as low as a dollar, Ben. Gave up 5 runs in 5 innings for Cincinnati. Still struck out 6, though. Over his last 3 starts since reentering the rotation for Kyle Hendricks, he's thrown 16 innings, allowed those are the first 5 runs he's allowed, and he struck out 22. So how excited were you about Ben Brown this weekend?
Well, so Brown was gone in all my 15 teamers. I do have Brown on 2 DCs, but he was glued to my bench this week, unfortunately. I think I put him in both teams for this upcoming week, but I don't know. So I've heard Chris Towers talk about Brown a lot on the CBS podcast, and I wanted to look for myself. I saw on the list. So I have his Baseball Savant up, and the issue that Chris has with Brown, and I see what he's talking about. He's a 2-pitch pitcher. So on the year, Brown has thrown his 4-seamer 63% of the time and his knuckle curve 35.7% of the time. So that's almost 100% right there between 2 pitches. The 4-seamer has an X slug of 542 and an XBA of 314. And that's, he throws that 2/3 of the time. And then his knuckle curve is a 140 XBA and a 241 X slug. So I think he's getting lucky, or it's just like maybe they're crushing his fastball and then his knuckle curve's unhittable. But I guess once they start sitting on the knuckle curve, maybe this isn't going to be all for naught, but I don't know. And with the Cubs, he's like at the end of the rotation right now. I don't know who they're going to get back starter, like Wicks maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But, and then there's been talk about Brown being the closer, which would be nice, but not for my main event team. I hope that doesn't happen. But I don't know. I liked Brown's talent to take him in the DCs where I did, but I don't know if it's, now that I know more about who he's a pitcher, I don't know if it's going to be sustainable going forward with only the 2 pitches.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I like the upside. Like, I didn't break the bank. I got him in one league for $13. We'll talk about I pretty much put 13 everywhere and got him in one at 13. The other league, someone spent 120 something, and I wasn't even close. So, yeah, I wasn't breaking the bank, that's for sure. David Hamilton's a fun one, and I overspent in some leagues where I had to have middle infield and I had money to spend. It wasn't like leagues I was low on, but I'm interested in David Hamilton. I was interested when he first got called up, and then things kind of got wishy-washy with playing time. Now he's the dude with Vaughn Grissom hurt, and not to mention Vaughn Grissom just hasn't been good. But David Hamilton was picked up in 104 leagues, as high as 51, as low as a dollar. And over his last 10 games, 367 average, 4 stolen bases, the dude can run wild. So what was your thoughts on David Hamilton entering FAB this weekend?
Another guy where he was all gone, I think. I did manage to grab Hamilton in one of my 15s a week or two ago. So that's been nice to have a shortstop backup. And so the issue that I had with Hamilton earlier was platooning, but I think he's been in there for the Red Sox even against lefties.
Yep.
So that's helped out a lot. Then the next issue now is that he hits like ninth every game, which stinks, but if you need speed, you need speed. And also if you need like shortstop help, you need shortstop help. So it's, you can't really, beggars can't be choosers, but yeah, I like Hamilton. It's a good ad, and he should, like you mentioned with Grissom getting hurt, he should be in the lineup for the foreseeable future as long as he performs.
Yep. I'm a fan of that one for sure. Nick Gonzalez, I was actually surprised how available he still was. Probably gone in 15s, but picked up in 98 leagues in the OCs, as high as 50, as low as a dollar. Hitting 308 since called up on May 10th. 3 homers, 2 steals. What are you thinking on Nick Gonzalez? Because the hit tool is pretty legit, and this new improved power is very nice to see.
Right, yeah. I was interested in Gonzalez, but when he first got called up, I didn't really need second base help. So I didn't make a move to add him. But yeah, so far three homers, 2 steals across the basically 3 weeks. So those are good totals. Great average help, and the K rate seems to be reasonable. So it's not like he's getting helped out by Babbitt. Hopefully the Pirates actually keep him up this time, because I think he debuted last year as well and then went back down. But he kind of struggled to hit 209 in 115 at bats last year. Gonzalez did, but I like Nick Gonzalez. I think he's hitting kind of in the middle lineup too for them. And like, they don't have the worst lineup, the Pirates. So I like him as an ad.
Yeah. I was a fan of him. I just can't remember if I got him at all, or there's a lot of leagues where he was available. Didn't really need middle infield help. In the leagues I needed middle infield help, he wasn't available. So it's one of those song and dances with Nick Gonzalez, which always so much fun. Adam Duvall, when Ronald Acuña Jr. went down, everyone's like, okay, it looks like it's Duvall. This is the guy to add this week, so on and so forth. And then I was doing my FAB on Sunday. I wrote him up like everybody else did. You know, you do your due diligence. I was doing FAB. And Ben, I looked at his numbers. And over his last 10 games, Adam Duvall's hitting 194, does have 2 home runs, 34% K rate. And I'm like, okay, I know the skill set's good. Like, we've seen him play well before, and especially with full-time playing time, like, probably hits better than 194. But right now, he's hitting 194 in the last 10 games. How interested are you in Adam Duvall this week? Because I think I lowered my bids and I got him one place for like $7, but I was not breaking banks for Adam Duvall.
I think Duvall was added in my leagues the night of the Acuña injury. I think people are a little more aggressive there.
Speculator on it. Yeah.
Yeah. A little more aggressive there. But even like, I didn't even think about Duvall though, when it happened. Like, I remember listening
neither did I.
I remember listening to like your pod or whoever else. And I'm like, I didn't even think about Duvall when I was doing FAB. Like, maybe because it happened so late, the injury, and like I was kind of like done with FAB for the day, because I don't like to wait till last minute if I can't help it. But I mean, this has been who like Duvall's been in his career. Like, yeah, he has awesome power, but always like in the low to mid 200s, and that was even in better hitting environments. Now it's harder to hit this year, so I don't see his skill set translating, especially in the average department. I mean, sure, it's enticing that he's in the Braves lineup full time for the foreseeable future, but they're not as good as we all thought they would be. And the K's will be an issue. Doesn't run, so you really need Duvall to hit a lot of homers. And 108 at bats so far this year is fine, but you probably want more of like a 30 homer pace, and that's not quite that.
Yeah, no, it was very, very eye opening when I looked at his recent performance. Like, oof. That was not what I was expecting for the potential replacement for Ronald Acuña, which means he might not be. They might trade for someone still. So like trading for a Jock Peterson to go opposite, which Jock I don't think is leaving because Arizona's playing well, but something like that kind of scenario would make way too much sense. It's a platoon with him and see where things go. Uncle Ted's mentioning Casey Schmidt in the chat. Yeah, he's playing great. We saw this last year as a Giants fan. I want to see it more from him, but I agree. There's good things there. I'm not going to really ask too many more. Like Francisco Alvarez, if he wasn't stashed already, he got picked up everywhere. So he's back, supposed to be back Friday. We saw Spencer Schwellenbach of Atlanta. Maybe he sticks around and has some fun. Trevor Williams finally getting some love. He has a two-step next week. Nelson Velasquez got some action. He went as high as 159. I don't think I would have gone that way. Let's do the old fun game here. The max guys. George Springer was available in 9 leagues, Ben. Went as high as 311. That's a shocker. Josh Lowe was added. Let's see if there's any relevant one here. Reed Garrett went for more money than Jimmy Garcia. Would you have spent more on Reed Garrett or Jimmy Garcia?
Oh, man.
Fewer leagues because Garrett was already rostered, but Garrett's max was 211. Jimmy's was 204.
I think this the chance of Diaz coming back are better than Romano coming back. So maybe I'd go Jimmy, but I don't know. They're very similar, I think, situation-wise, but I don't like Garrett's kind of regressed. His whip isn't that good anymore. It's kind of high. And I'd probably lean Jimmy, I guess, because I don't think Edwin will be gone for long.
Yeah, that's fair. For those that had David Fry in 27 leagues, he went as high as 195. So that's hurts. Robert Gasser was added in 4 leagues as high as 185. That's going to sting. As low as 25, still that stings. Yeah. TJ Friedel. I want to ask you about Hunter Brown, though. Hunter Brown was added in 48 leagues, as high as 168, as low as $3. This is a guy that, you know, this is why I like the love and hate with staying up late to do the first pitch, but doing it because it keeps me like up to date on what's going on. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this was actually kind of interesting. And if you go back to all of his starts in May, go back to May 5th, because it was a rough month of April. But May 5th, he had three earned runs or less in 4 or 5 starts, no more than 4 earned, but 3.62 ERA, 3.37 xFIP, 36 Ks and 32 and a third innings. Still had 11 walks, which you don't want to see. But Hunter Brown seems like he's kind of turning the corner, kind of going in the right direction. What are you seeing when you look at Hunter Brown? Because I was interested in him this week. I just apparently wasn't as interested as other people were.
Yeah, so I see him as someone who I'm going to start now in my DC where I have him.
I put him in. Yeah, I put him in this week too. I'm with you there.
I wish I noticed. I mean, well, the April was just so brutal that I didn't want anything to do with him for the longest time. Like, if I had other options, I was going to start other people because I wasn't sure what was happening with Brown. But on his year-to-date fan graphs, I mean, I kind of alluded to the reliability of the underlying metrics this year, but his xFIP is actually 373 Browns. So that's surprising. Part of the reason why it's like that is because his homer to fly ball rate is 21%, and that's very high. And his ground ball rate is 50%. His left on base is low, roughly 68%. Usually it's above higher than 70. And the walk rate for the year is 4 per 9. And in percentage terms, that's 10%. So that's not good. So like you mentioned, the walks are still kind of there in May. But definitely things are looking in the right direction for Brown. And hopefully I don't get screwed over by starting him finally this week.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was very, very interested to see that. Uncle Ted mentioned Spencer Arrighetti. Yep, he's also throwing much better of late. So maybe they're figuring out in Houston. They're going to need it because looks like Jose Urquidy is going to have Tommy John yet again. So they're going to need to keep that rotation locked and loaded. But yeah, a lot of fun stuff out there. I always encourage people, look at who was dropped in your leagues, because when I do that whole like max bid, there are some names and OCs that were available in certain leagues, not in all, obviously. Like Mackenzie Gore was added in one league. Like certain guys are out there that just blows my mind. Obviously, Ben does not experience that in 15s because that's just lunacy. But that's the world of 12s we live in. So have fun with that. Before we head out of here, Ben, let's recap our fab from the week. So
I was going to say, before we do that, you're talking about ads that are drops that you don't experience in the main event. Garrett Crochet was dropped in one of my main events this week.
What?
Garrett Crochet was dropped.
I know he's like expected to have his innings crunched, but I would have rode that train till the wheels fell off. Like the only thing I can think of is someone had too many pitchers and they want someone in their league to use a lot of fab for like another month. That's the only thing I can think of. Otherwise, I'm confused.
Let me go to the league fab results.
That's pretty crazy.
I'm not going to say who dropped him. Yeah, I want to see what the move was. For Jordan Wicks.
What?
Yeah, that was who he was dropped for.
Wow.
Interesting. So I was telling Curlin, and this is the league where I fab Christian Scott. So I'm also like in the low 300. So I don't want to like make a dumb move where I overspend when I don't have the money left and then he's done in like July. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens this upcoming Sunday.
Yeah, that's one way to see some money leave your league. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fun. That's fun stuff. All right, let's recap some fab, Ben. What do you got in your 15s?
All right. So main event one. I want to know your take on this drop because I didn't ask you about it beforehand. But so I added Pecro Armstrong. I'm surprised he didn't come up in the.
He was farther down. I was going to bring him up, but then I did the max thing because he did stand out. So I'm glad you're going to talk about him because my tune has changed on him as well. So I'm glad you brought him up. So what do you got on Pete?
Yeah, so I added Pecro Armstrong. So I dropped Elliot Ramos, 26-25. I didn't really want to drop Ramos, but with Conforto supposed to be back this week, and from hearing, I don't know if you were saying this, others, but Matos is like the only center fielder that they have right now in the Giants. And I don't know, like Ramos, he's definitely done better of the two, but I don't know, like, I feel like they want to play Conforto, like they want to contend, I think, or try to contend. So I kind of just did it a week early. And I think Ramos only had like the schedule wasn't the best or something. I don't know. I wanted to try to go for the steals. So I don't know what you think about that drop, but
if you need steals, yes, you want PCA. Ramos is better than Matos. And I said that the second everyone was all adding Matos for a ton of money because he had that one big RBI weekend, and Ramos continues to be consistent. What you're also saying about the center field thing is 100% valid. I'm curious what the Giants do. Like, Conforto will play every day, but he could DH because Lamont Wade's out. Like, there's a lot of ways to go around. Like, we could see Tyler Fitzgerald go back to AAA. Like, there's a lot the Giants can do. The Giants can also realize they're pretty much out of it. Let's play the young kids. I know they want to play some of these veterans to trade them. That's the conundrum. I think Ramos and Matos stick for now. I think Ramos sticks longer, but again, they need center fielders. So it's a very valid point. It's very confusing, and that's coming from a Giants fan. So very confusing.
And then I looked at his year-to-date line closer today just to help myself feel better one way or the other. And he has 32 strikeouts, Ramos, and 84 at-bats. So that's a high rate. And he's hitting .286 so far. So I'm like, well, if he can just strike out this rate, he's not going to do as well. So maybe I was justified, but we'll see.
That's fair.
I just hope it doesn't hurt me because I had Ramos a couple spots, and now I don't. And then this league, this one's annoying. So I added Johnny Brito, dropped DL Hall, $4, no runner-up. And Brito's not even going to be the two-step starter now. It's the rookie, so that's annoying. And then I added Michaelis, dropped Graham Ashcraft finally, $2, no backup. So hopefully I can use Michaelis as a bench streamer. That was main one. Main two, added Jake McCarthy, dropped Nick Gordon. This one was tough, dropping Nick Gordon because he had such a good week, but he's platooning, and I feel like, I don't know, I'd rather just – I held on to Harrison Bader instead. It was between Gordon and Bader, and Bader's in play full-time, but he's less platoony than Gordon. And so I went with that decision. So it was for $14, back up of four. So that was good. A lot of, as you'll probably pay, as you hear, a lot of low bids for me. And then this is where I added Gio Urshela. I dropped Eugenio Suarez, $8, back up of four. And then we didn't mention this at all, really. But so I, instead of adding our boy Rodri Munoz, I added Max Meyer because RotoWire has Meyer potentially in next week as the starter to replace Edward Cabrera. And I figured try to add Meyer now for maybe cheaper. And then if Rodri gets called up, I don't think people are as high on him as like you and myself are. So I could probably get him cheap.
We're in our own little world there, I think.
I know. I think Ryan made fun of you for him. Yep. I'm like,
he's an imaginary player.
He was a great stream that one week. I think we got a win out of it or something. So I dropped Ashcraft again. I'm sick of Ashcraft. I haven't really been playing him, but like he's back to bad Ashcraft. Not that he was ever really good, but it hasn't really come through with a step forward this year. So that was $4, dropped back up two. Main three, I added Joey Estes, who lost his two-step, kind of like Brito, which is annoying. But I still had to play Estes for the one start against the Mariners. This is where I also dropped Ramos. I needed pitching help, and I had, so this one's not as bad. I had eight outfielders, including Ramos, because I got Friedel back from the injured list. So Ramos is a little more expendable here. So I added Estes for eight, dropped backup three, and then I added Brito again, dropped Ashcraft six, no backup. And then in my OLAC, I added McCarthy. I dropped Will Brennan, $16, $12 backup, and that was it.
All righty, some fun little small bids, like you said. So I'm with you there. I'll do my 15s. I'll start with Listener League One for Bubba and the Bloom. This one I had a lot of money, so I said, screw it. I want to make sure I get these guys. I added David Hamilton, dropped Andy Abanya, 66 to 28. Added Jonathan India, dropped Frankie Montas, even though he has a two-step. I just, the more I looked into him, I wasn't in there. But India's got the week in Coors and Great American, seven games, $33 to $31 runner-up. So I'm pretty pumped on that one. Got India in a couple places, actually, surprising. Auction Listener League Two that I'm in. Got Jeremiah Estrada, dropped AJ Puck, 33 to 22. Added David Hamilton, dropped Andy Abanez, 33 to 14. Added Jesus Sanchez, dropped Trey Lipscomb, 14 to 1. Nobody likes Sanchez's weekend coming up. That was so slightly surprising to me. My main event qualifier, this one I did spin on Duvall because I needed help in the outfield, and this might sting. Adam Duvall dropped Brian Ramos, 44 to 33. That was my only add for the week. Didn't break the bank, but still spent enough. And then my OLAC, just one move. DJ LeMahieu dropped Jake Bauer 6-5, so that felt pretty good. I had a lot of close bids this week, so that was pretty fun stuff as well. But I'm a believer at DJ LeMahieu. He's looked good since coming back, hit ninth, multi-position. Like, there's rooms to be all to be had there for sure. Before I do my 12 teams, what do you have for your Yahoo?
One question. Would you have dropped Spencer Torkelson in the 15?
That's a great question. I did not. And I guess that would have been like TGFBI and Barf. I think I had Torque in both of them, both 15s. I did not. And that's where I added Gio Urshela in both. That's why when you were talking about him, I already had Gio in one of those, I think the OLAC I mentioned or the main event queue. I added him a while back because I needed corner infield help. And I just trusted the pedigree, thinking he's just back, got him cheap, so on and so forth. He's actually been much better than I expected. And with Torque coming out, then it's Gio's world. So I didn't drop Torque yet. He's one of those guys I'm trying to hold as long as possible because I believe he'll be back. But, you know, if there's enough injuries, you're just going to have to bite the bullet probably eventually. But in 15s, it's tough. In 12s, I could see more of a drop.
Yeah, I held on to Torque myself in my main event. And I didn't add a backup first baseman because my backup is actually Andrew Vaughn, who's equally as bad. And now he's got the thumb thing going on. So I'm risking not having a first baseman this week. But I don't know. I didn't want to drop Torque.
And that was the other reason I didn't drop him, especially in 15s, is I was looking at the replacements. And if you didn't have your Urshela available, it sucked. Like, there's nothing out there at first base or even corner infield in most 15-team leagues. And that's another reason, like, with David Hamilton, I was so excited, like, over-aggressive in some, because middle infield, like, it's getting dry out there outside. Like, the outfield, there's people you can stream almost every week. Infield, it's rough. It's very bad these days, so I was a little more aggressive in that regard, and that could be a strategy for some going forward potentially, and see where that goes. So what do you got?
All right. Yeah. So I'll list off, this is my daily Yahoo league. I'll name off my ad since last Monday. So I added Acuna. So someone dropped him at the keeper league with IL. So I'm like,
what?
I think I was a 15th rounder next year.
Keeper league at an IL at 15. What are people doing in this league?
Yeah. I won't say anything about my friend who did it, but yeah.
Feel free. Blast him.
So I got Acuna, and I mentioned, so we do you keep guys based on the round you drafted them, and then for the ads we decided on 15th rounder. So
so he would have had him as a first round guy, missing probably. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, I don't know if he needed the IL space, but I mean, for me, I think Acuna actually cleared waivers, and then he was a free agent, and I just added him, so no one else.
Wow.
Nobody else thought about last year or next year. I mean, and kind of the clear space, I ended up dropping Matt McClain. I was stashing him. So one of my streams I did was I added Kirilloff, dropped Eddie Rosario, added Ben Lively for his one start, and then I tried streaming a save for Ryan Pressly. I dropped Lively for that move, and so I needed a save, and I ended up the category was not, like, I lost by two, so it didn't even matter. But Pressly gave a run in the eighth, and then the other guy I was between was Yuki Matsui, and I saw him pitching in the bottom of the ninth, and then I saw he blew the game, so I'm like, okay, well, it was less damage from Pressly. Then I added Luis Garcia Jr. I dropped Brandon Lau. And then this morning I added Matt Waldron for his, at least for tonight's start. And then also I don't think we mentioned this, but I added Connor Norby. Okay. He got called up by the Orioles. So I'm going to see what happens with him.
That's fair. I'm curious. Like, he got the start. So that's a
start. I waited to see if he was going to be in the lineup.
Yeah. That's one start in the right direction for Baltimore with prospects. So I got that going for him. 7-day concussion IL for Mateo, so we'll see how long that lasts for. My 12-team OCs, this is one of those. Ben Brown, He went for $14 in this league, my runner up at 13, which worked out because I got Tyler McGill for 13 with a runner up at 13. I actually like McGill more than Brown. I don't know why I did that, but there we are. And then the beautiful things about 12s. I got Mark Vientos, dropped Johnny DeLuca, 6-0. Added Alex Kirilloff, dropped Nolan Chenault, 4-0. So these are the great, but cheap bids, so is what it is.
Yeah, you're not, not overshooting it by much. It's fine.
Yeah, that works out. Now, in my second OC, this was fun. Jonathan India dropped Griffin Canning, 8-7. And Canning will be a stream off and on in 12s, though. He's just a stream. That's the thing. Then Matt Waldron dropped Chris Paddock, 7-3. So those were at least respectable. I know Paddock and Canning probably don't get dropped in 15s, but in a 12, I'll take my chances. And then, oh, and that was the one, I think, where Ben Brown went for $1 million. Brown went for 121 in that one. So not even close there. And then in OC3, I did get Ben Brown for $13, dropped Frankie Montas, runner-up, 13 for that one. And then I got Adam Duvall, dropped Ronald Acuna Jr., 7-0. So like that's where I was saying I didn't break the bank, like $7. I can take the chance at $7 and see where things go and see where things go from there. All right, I have a couple of questions in the chat here. I starred Stephen Crawford. He says, how would we feel about Hap or Friedel as a stream this week? Well, Friedel's got Colorado and then at home in Great American. I think he wins the battle on that one.
For sure. I'm very excited to have Friedel in my lineup this week where I have him. And Hap is annoying because I dropped him in my 12-teamer and now he's going off.
So did I. Yeah, don't you worry. It was one of the weeks we missed recording, and it was one where I would have said I dropped Ian Hap, and then he went bonkers. So that was fun stuff there. Our buddy Uncle Ted says, do you keep bats on your benches or just stack arms? It's a team dependent thing for me. How do you do it though?
So the team where I dropped one of the teams I dropped Ramos, I ended up having 5 hitters because of injuries, but ideally I would like to have it be no injuries, 3 hitters, 4 starters on my bench.
I'm pretty close to that. Like I'm like 2-5, 3-4, something like that, depending on like if I have a like it's really weird. I started looking at teams like pitching points, hitting points more closely. I have a couple teams where I have like 65 pitching points and like 12 hitting points. And then I have like it's all over the freaking board. It's so weird because you have the same mindset when you draft, but the way things shake out, it's just insane looking at things. So it's definitely a team dependent thing for sure. And then Dr. Doom says, where have all the Gossman strikeouts gone? You're telling me. It's some games he has them and some he doesn't. That's the weirdest part. But what do you think?
Well, I don't know. So I was going to ask you, because I know you were all about the Gossman the discount. Tip. So yeah. How are you feeling about all those teams you drafted him on?
I'm better now. I was actually benching him for a while after the first couple of rough starts. But like tonight, he's inning in 2/3, 2 runs, 1K already. He's already in a struggle bus today. But he's got 2 start this week, so you're running that one out there. But like 1 run, 1 run, 3 runs, 6, 0, 1, 0, 1. Like that's a run of what, 7, 8 starts with basically 300 or less. And most of them, he had 5 or more Ks in 5 of them. So it's like they're not dominant like you'd hope for with Gossman. But like he's slowly improving. He's got an 18% K to walk. Like I think it's still coming. He even admitted he needed more spring training. Like he realizes the value of spring training now. Let's put it that way. But I think he'll be fine. It's just it's not the dominant Cy Young Gossman. And I still think we might get like this could be a Blake Snell from last year where we saw the rough start that he finished strong. Like as long as Gossman's healthy, I'm cool with hanging on as long as possible.
Yes, I had Gossman on one of my main events last year, and so I started watching him because of that. And he kind of reminded me of Singer because it's so four-seamer and then split-finger, which is more like his two-seamer. And for someone who's such a highly touted pitcher, I'm like, I wish he had a better arsenal to choose from. So that kind of kept me away, and then the injury kept me even farther away, and then I think I kind of had Gossman up in like a range where I would draft him if it came to it, but I ended up not getting him anywhere. And yeah, so it's just like the two main pitches that kind of always scared me after seeing him pitch like that last year. I'm like, this guy's got like Brady Singer, but better. I don't know. That's the feeling I always got from watching him pitch.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's why for years I was off of him because it was so splitter heavy. And that was my argument. And then I wasn't really on him this year until the dip. And I'm like, okay, I'll buy the dip and take my chances. Like that's, to me, that's how you can gamble and try to win type scenario. Yep. But so far, that hasn't won. But at the same time, he was like a pitcher two, SP2 in a lot of leagues because I did the whole waiting situation. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm still optimistic, like I said, with Kevin Gausman, but you never know. Like, I understand the concerns, but it's not like he's your SP 4 or 5. It's the dude you have high expectations for. So hang on as long as you can. All right, Ben, we're going to wrap it up there. Before we head on out of here, remind everybody where they can see you and what you got going on.
Yep. Just tweet in every once in a while on Twitter, BreakingBen_T. And as Bob mentioned, I've been writing for Sports Ethos this year. Got my weekly pitcher streaming article that comes out on Sunday, usually in the morning, to get you ready for Fab that night. And yeah, and then I'll be on here whenever Bubba asks me to come on.
Yep. Nope. I appreciate it. The seat's usually yours these days. So I appreciate that one. And maybe we'll do this again next week. I'll be in touch with you as the week goes on, and it works for me. It works in my schedule every time. So thanks for joining me as always. Make sure y'all check him out on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Intrick. And for now, this is Bench with Bubba episode 673. Catch y'all next time.